funnily enough, I've got some Pope facts in front of me. And we'll come back and talk about your book in a minute, but I've got some Pope facts. A few of them wouldn't have been above having a little bit of beating on their bare bottoms, would they? Paul II, 1464 to 71, was a practicing homosexual. He spent vast sums of church money on Mardi Gras-like parades, spectaculars and banquets. He slept during the day, a bit like us, and spent nights adorning himself with priceless jewellery and frolicking with the numerous boyfriends in the sumptuous rooms of the Vatican. Paul apparently wore a huge, sparkling, jewel-encrusted tiara, and also enjoyed voyeurism and bondage, and liked to watch naked men being racked and tortured in the papal dungeons. Poor old Paul died of a heart attack on July 26, 1471, whilst being sodomized by one of his favourite boys. I've got all these wonderful facts about popes. I mean, Julius III, 1550 to 55, took as his lovers both his bastard son and his adopted son. I mean, this is just it's really quite the most... And Pope Innocent VII, 1484, extracted from women confessions that they wanted to be tortured in horrible ways.
Nice people.
They burned to death over 30,000 witches charged with having sex with the devil, who the church insisted at that time had a brutal penis covered with fish scales.
This was back in the days of the Inquisition. Nice people, eh? They did some wonderful things in the name of God when you think about it.
I mean, this is it's not particularly an office that I'd like to have much to do with.
You're absolutely right, I think.
But anyway, all right, what prompted you to look into this? You know, your claims from part of the Cassandra prophecy say that this has all been laid out in history, that the new Pope has been chosen, whatever they say.
That's right. I mean, as we can probably see in the newspapers at the moment, there's a lot of politics going on inside the Vatican, a lot of vying for power, because it is a high position, let's face it. However, back in the 11th, 12th century, this Irish priest called Malachi, he was actually born in Ireland, in Armagh. He eventually became the primate of Armagh, but in 1143 he visited the Vatican on a pilgrimage. While he was there, apparently he had a vision, and he committed his vision to paper, and gave it as a present, probably at Christmas. It was apparently Christmas when he went. He gave it as a present to the Pope. The Pope then filed it away in the archives, gave it to one of his lackeys, said, "Very nice, put this away." And it wasn't until, what, about 1542, that a Benedictine theologian was looking through the Vatican archives, and he discovered this piece of parchment. And what he found was that Malachi had, in a strange way, correctly named every pope from Innocent II back in 1143, right the way, and in fact has continued to name every pope successfully. He gives them...
Even the last one.
Even the last one. He gives them what is called an epithet. It's a little phrase in Latin, two or three words, and this epithet either describes who they were, something about their name, something about where they came from, something about their coat of arms. It describes them in very different ways.
How did you describe the current one? Has it got a fascination with tarmac at airports, or...?
The current one is called, in Latin, De Labora Solis, the work of the sun. And there are various people who initially turned around and said, oh yes, that is all about basically his pontificate. He's the most travelled pope in the history of the world. The work of the sun goes round the world spreading its light. And so you can basically take an analogy with John Paul II as having gone round the world spreading the light of Roman Catholicism. However, if you get a little bit more up to date, in 1992, after 13 years in secret conclave, the Pope actually announced that after 13 years of thinking about it, the Catholic Church's position with regards to the earth and the rest of the things that wander around in our particular universe had changed. Beforehand, the Catholic Church's ideal was that the earth was at the centre of the universe and everything else revolved round the earth. Now, for this reason, Galileo was subject to the Inquisition, amongst other things, because Galileo said this isn't true. But in 1992, after 13 years in secret conclave, mind, the Catholic Church came out and John Paul announced that he was very, very sorry as to what had happened to Galileo, and that the Roman Catholic Church...
Should we remind everybody what did happen to Galileo? He was...
Well, he basically, he was stretched, he was, he had a lot of nasty things done to him, stretched, suffered severe torture, because they turned around and said, you're wrong, I'm sorry, the earth does not revolve around the sun, we Catholics are right, the earth is at the centre of the universe, and the sun and everything else revolves around
I mean, they were a
that.
Nasty, evil bunch of people, weren't
they?
Oh,
they were buggers.
Are you a Catholic or not?
I'm not, no.
Does it make any difference whether you are or not? I mean, if you're born a Catholic, is it like being born Jewish or...?
I have no idea, really, no, James. I think religion is all... It's all down to personal choice, and it's all a fairly private thing anyway.
But why are you so... Ian, why are you so interested, though? I mean, I asked you this before last time. We talked about the Cassandra prophecy. But, I mean, why is there such a burning desire to uncover these stories?
I just found it fascinating since I was a kid, James. My grandfather told me about Old Mother Shipton, because I'm a Yorksman, much like yourself. You know where Old Mother Shipton's well is.
I've been there.
Up in the Dales, and he told me about...
In Knaresborough.
He told me about this lady who could see the future. And I was young at the time, and I was fascinated by this. My grandfather was a headmaster at a grammar school in Bradford, and he knew a bit about Nostradamus and a bit about Revelation in the Bible and various things like that. And I suppose that kicked it off. I've always been interested ever since. And this thing about Malachi was something that I'd come across but really hadn't researched until I actually went to the Vatican. I spent five interesting days in the Vatican Library.
Did you?
Very strange place.
Oh, we'll find out after these words. Ian Gurney is my guest, author of The Cassandra Prophecy, a book about Armageddon, and a new book that's out now. Is it out now? It certainly is.
You can, if I can quickly plug, you can buy it at Caspro.com, Caspro.com, or at Amazon.
I think if you go to TalkSport's website, you go to our bookshelf section, you will be able to buy it there too.
Excellent.
And it is called the... what is it called? Remind me.
The Cassandra Prophecy.
All right, okay. But it's come out in paperback now as well, because last time we talked it was a big, thick book, wasn't it?
No, not really. This is... what you have in your hand there is the American version.
Oh, have I got the American version?
Yeah, you've got
the
American version.
Oh, I'm keeping this
published in the...
Oh, an import.
I'm keeping this an import. It's got big letters as well. Okay. So, anyway, you know who the next Pope's going to be, and you're telling me...
I'm not saying I know. What I'm saying is that I have a fair idea.
Yeah.
You can basically... As I say, John Paul II was called the work of the sun, and we have pretty much proved that... That has been correct, because the Catholic Church, during his papacy, came out and said, fine, you know, we now say that the earth does indeed revolve around the sun, and that's it. That's the Catholic attitude now.
What about the Pope before?
The Pope before, that was John Paul I, of the Half Moon, he was called, of the Half Moon. He, well, there was a lot of controversy surrounding John Paul I. He lived for 33 days as Pope, and that was all. He came to the papacy and actually left the papacy when there was a half moon. There was only one full moon during his papacy. And, of course, there have been a lot of stories. A friend of mine, David Yallop, an excellent ex-BBC journalist, wrote a book called In God's Name. And if you want to find out what probably happened to John Paul I, then you should read that book. But he was called the Half Moon. The next one, after John Paul II, is called Gloria Olivae.
Yes.
The glory of the olive, or the glory of the olive tree. And this has really fascinated a lot of people, particularly on the internet, and particularly amongst Vatican circles and amongst Vatican watchers, I have to tell you. Because the Benedictines are called Olivetans. It's another word for Benedictines, and it was always thought that Gloria Olivae would be a Benedictine cardinal. Now, of course, the most noticeable of the Benedictine cardinals was Cardinal Basil Hume, who sadly died back a couple of years ago in 1999. And so there doesn't appear to be a Benedictine cardinal in waiting who perhaps could be the next pope. Then we have Cardinal Carlo Maria Martini. I think anybody who's read anything about the Vatican over the last year, year and a half, will know of this Cardinal Martini. He's very, very powerful figure in the Vatican, a very powerful figure. And they are the, there are the commentators around who have turned and said, ah, yes, well, what do you put in a martini? You put
Benedictine.
you put an olive. You put an olive in a martini. And so if you put an olive in a martini, surely this is like the glory of the olive would be the martini itself. I've always found that a little bit spurious. So I was doing a fair amount of research about a year and a half ago.
So are you, I mean, are you why are you fascinated by the Vatican? Why does the Vatican hold this interest for you?
I suppose I'm more fascinated by the fact that Malachi has actually managed to correctly prophesy 110 popes. He actually gives, in his list of popes, 112. The next one, as I said, is Gloria Olivae.
And we don't know who she is. I mean, who he is.
And then the next one after that is Petrus Romanus, Peter the Roman. And what he says after Peter the Roman is, he gives a little soliloquy, if you like, in Latin, which says basically, Peter the Roman will guide his flock through the greatest tribulation the world has ever seen, after which the seven-hilled city will be totally destroyed and the great judge will judge all the people.
So what this means, guys, listening at the moment, let me just say that, we have two more popes to go, and then it is goodnight Vienna.
It has assumed the position.
Which is more or less what the Cassandra prophecy is about, which I haven't really made, because we've talked about this before.
We have.
But let me just make this so we all know what we're going to say. We're going to go through this in a few minutes, bit by bit. I was just looking here at Julius, who made Pope when he was 12. Can you believe that?
Wow. I know there was a lady Pope as well. Have you got
it? Yes, oh yeah.
Female Pope.
Yeah, and after that they made this special thing so they could feel...
The special chair with a hole.
That's it, the special chair. This is absolutely true. This is all, you know, do Catholics learn about this sort of stuff?
I have no idea, but I've learned about it, and it is absolutely true.
You've seen the chair?
I haven't seen the chair, no.
No. Well, there's a chair.
I've seen photographs of it, but I've not actually been...
And do the Popes still have to go through this?
I believe so.
They have to sit on the chair, apparently, and one of the Minion Pope people sticks his hand through the hole and has a feel just to make sure it is a man. Because they were conned by Pope Jane, wasn't it?
They were indeed.
And she was a woman, and they didn't know for ages. I don't know, it won't make much difference, but there we are. It's a great story. Is it true, though?
It is true, yeah.
It is true.
Yes, it is true, absolutely true.
Right. Okay, so you've traced this back, and by this prophecy of Malachi, you've actually now, you've come to a conclusion, we have two more popes to go.
That's right.
They could do you know how long they're going to last?
No idea. Malachi is not very specific about any. I mean, some have lasted less than John Paul I. I think one only lived for about six. Well, one was only pope for about 6 days.
So I mean, the current pope's quite an old bloke. He could do another 10 years or so, quite easily.
He could well, yeah. He could certainly do another five, and then we have two more after that. And sort of, who knows really? Who knows?
So say 25, 25, 50. It could be another 60 years.
Possibly could be another 60 years. I would doubt it personally, but it could be another 60 years for two popes.
Do you believe this?
I do, yeah.
You do believe this?
I do believe this.
So has that made you change the way you think about your life and that if the world isn't going to... do you contribute to a large pension fund or anything? Is it worth it?
I think if I'm right, I don't think you can run or you can hide. It just happens. I'm quite philosophical about the whole thing. I think it's made me... It's certainly made me more interested in things that are going on around the planet, particularly from an ecological point of view, funnily enough, because particularly in the Book of Revelation, it would appear that the last seven plagues, that certain of them are very definitely ecological disasters. And if we have a look around at what's going on in the world at the moment, we are beginning to get into rather a sorry state, particularly when we have an American...
No. It is not a sorry state. I must bring you up there in, because it is written, right? This is the way it's going to go.
Uh-huh.
There is none in any of these great books, whatever they are, that prophesy the end of the world. There is no alternative.
That's true.
You know, it has to go. And I'm of the view anyway, since I got ill, I've become fairly complacent, although I'd like everybody to have long, happy and wonderful lives. I would. But nothing is forever. Not even this planet is forever. There has to be a time that it gets old and crinkly and dies.
This is true. I think the time has not come for that yet. There's an interesting gentleman around who worked for NASA for a while called Professor James Lovelock, who has got a hypothesis called the Gaia hypothesis. And the Gaia hypothesis about the fact that itself is an organism, and that everything that lives on that organism, which is our Earth, has to adopt and adapt to it. The only problem is that if one of those life forms that is on that organism causes the organism itself some problems, which mankind appears to be doing to the Earth at the moment, James Lovelock's theory is that the Earth will get rid of whatever it is causing the problem.
If you like, think of the world, the planet, as a being, and think of the human race as an infection.
Absolutely.
And so it would, you know, the corpuscles of the planet, if you like, or whatever, would go and try to extricate the human virus.
Yeah, spot on.
That's cool. I'm pleased. Yeah. There. Yes,
that's what James Lovelock says. Nothing to do with me, but it's a good hypothesis called the Gaia hypothesis.
So where do you get to in the Cassandra prophecy? I mean, you name the next two popes.
I don't really.
Or he names them. You just write about it here.
I name who I think may be the next pope. I mean, if I turned around and told you that during my research I suddenly came upon a cardinal who actually happened to live in the most famous olive-growing region of Tuscany, whose father was an olive grower, and whose surname you can extract the word olivi from, you would say that was, I would think, quite a coincidence.
And have you?
I have indeed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's the Archbishop Cardinal of, he's the Archbishop Cardinal of Florence. Mm. Florence is the capital of Tuscany, which is the most well-known...
lovely city.
Beautiful
worth going
place.
To for a weekend.
Beautiful, beautiful place. Mm. It's the capital of the olive-growing region of Italy, and his name happens to be Silvano Piovanelli. Piovanelli. Mm-hmm. And you can extract the name Olivi from his surname, Piovanelli. As I say, he lives... he was brought up in a place called Ronta di Mugello, just outside of Tuscany. He's the Cardinal Archbishop, just outside of Florence. He's the Cardinal Archbishop of Florence, and his father was an olive grower. And my proposition, basically, is I think that this guy is probably the next pope. I've actually had a word with a couple of journalist friends of mine based in Rome who are Vatican watchers, and they say that although he is not up there as one of the favourites as such, in inverted commas, he is a very, very well-respected man, and he would make a very, very good... I suppose he's not a liberal.
How old is he?
And he's not a right winger. He was born in 1924.
Oh, God.
So he's about 60. He's getting on now.
That's no good. I wanted him to be 12.
No, he's about 67, I think. Yeah. He's about 67. But he's considered by quite a few people to be a good choice between the left wing, the liberals, and the right wing, you know, the fundamentalists, the
traditionalists. Supposing he didn't get the job, would you have egg all over your face, or would you have to rewrite the book?
I don't think so, no. I mean, I've basically said in the book and in the article that it's, you know, is this Malachi's Gloria Olivi, or is this just a simple coincidence? I mean, it could be just a simple coincidence that this guy happens to be the son of an olive grower.
But having said that, Ian, you might now have done what a lot of people do once they start telling people, we know what you're going to do next, blah, blah, blah. They're not going to choose him at all. Or, well, actually, it's not. They don't choose him, do they? They go down in the basement somewhere.
They are touched by the Holy Ghost, which is basically the way that the Catholics talk about it. In my opinion, it is...
Don't they all go down and write the name of the one they think on a bit of paper?
That's
right. And
they
keep doing this until they've all come together.
Until they all have... until there is a mandate, basically, for the person that they think is going to be the next pope, yeah.
And then the smoke goes out the chimney.
The white smoke goes out of the chimney, yeah. It's a very, very political decision. If you ask anybody, any of the Vatican watchers, any of the journalists that are out there and watching the Vatican, having a look at what is going on day in, day out, you will find that they will tell you the same thing. The politics inside the Vatican is tremendous. I mean, it is almost at the moment, there is more intrigue going on than you could ever imagine in our election.
But how come there is all this going on in the 21st century, all this belief in hocus pocus and people still paying lip service to this sort of thing? How does a church have so much hold on people.
Power. It is power. That is
basically. But where do they get this power from? From putting out stories that and over the years, some of the stories the Catholics have believed in have been horrendous. The Inquisition, everything else. How have they managed to continue to have so much power in the world?
I could ask the same question of how come the Germans followed Hitler? Why would they do such a stupid thing? You look back in history, you can say, why did the Bolsheviks follow Stalin? Mm. Why did the Chinese follow Mao Zedong? Are we that stupid? We obviously appear to be that stupid. We are convinced by various things which tend to suit our lifestyle at the time. I forget who it was. Somebody said that if God didn't exist, somebody would have to invent him. It is as simple as that. But it basically is about power. And the way they control power, and this is not just necessarily the Roman Catholic Church, this is religion in general, is controlled by people who say, you can only reach God through me.
If you're right, and this guy has prophesied all the popes, then this bloke will become the pope, or he could become the pope.
He could become the pope.
And if somebody else does, then maybe, do you have to believe in God then, or some outside force, or do you think this is just a sort of...
I think whatever happens, the next pope will eventually be seen to have conformed to Malachi's prophecy. Gloria Olivi could be... the olive branch, he could be a peacemaker. He could be a great peacemaker. I could have got it totally wrong. As I'm saying, all I find is that there is an incredible... It's just one of those things that is a little difficult for me to explain to myself how come somebody can come along with a name like Silvano Piovanelli, which includes Olivi, and comes from the olive growing region, and his father was an olive grower. It actually, while I was doing my research and I was looking through the cardinals, the name just jumped out of the page at me.
When you went to the Vatican, you spent, you said it was an interesting place, the library, you spent some time in the library.
Mm.
What was it like?
It was, it was very interesting, it was very strange, it was very, they were very wary of me, they wanted to know. I applied in writing many months before. They really wanted to know what I was doing, why I wanted to look at things, why I wanted to see various things. I've been told by a couple of people to ask for certain things as well. And I was told that it probably wouldn't be a good idea, but to leave those things till last. So anyway, I'd asked for the Malachi documents.
Mm.
I'd asked for various other things. I'd asked to have a look at some of the earliest Latin transcriptions of the Bible, Latin transcriptions of the early Vulgate Bible, which first came out in the 4th century AD and was a direct translation, if you like, from the Greek.
Are they very different to the Bible that we all know and love?
There are some oddities, is all I can say. There are some oddities about it, which would take an awful long time to talk about, but I'm actually formulating in my mind, and to a certain extent on the computer at the moment, my next book where I'm going to discuss this. But certainly, between the Greek and the Latin Bible, most things are correct, but they do take little liberties along the way. For instance, without wishing to go into too much detail, the word for virgin in the Greek Bible is a little ambiguous. It doesn't necessarily mean an intact woman. It can mean a woman of marriageable age. And, of course, that basically meant when a woman came to her periods. Mm. Now, in the Middle East, in those days, Mary would have married Joseph. Mary would have been a young girl, maybe 13, maybe 14, and Joseph would have been an older man. It's just the way it worked then. Mm. It works in Middle Eastern countries still like that. But the word for virgin in Greek is ambiguous, and it doesn't necessarily mean virgin.
Okay.
It can mean the younger. So that's just one of the things that you get from reading the two.
But they didn't like you having all these things.
They didn't particularly mind me having certain things. What happened was that at the end of the episode, when I'd seen what I wanted to see, I asked for a certain document by number, and I'd been given a number by a journalist friend of mine who said you should ask for this, see what you get. And the chap who was looking after me was away for about 30 minutes and then came back with a guy I'd seen around. I think he was the assistant chief librarian and a member of the Swiss Guard, and I was asked to leave. And it was just as simple as that. They just said, I'm sorry, we'd like you to leave. We can't continue with your research any further. And that was it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, no option. I just asked to leave.
Okay.
I don't really want to go into too much detail.
In case they won't let you back.
I don't think they will. But basically, the document I was asking for was purportedly documented something that happened at the end of the war and the paying in of some jewellery into the Vatican Bank in exchange for disguises and the various people from the concentration camps being sent or being put on boats in Genoa to go to South America. What I was asking for was actually a receipt for jewellery and gold, which appears to have been taken.
You're talking about guards rather than inmates of concentration camps.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're saying that the Vatican took payment from some of these people to ship them out of the country.
I'm saying there have been many, many rumours.
And when you ask to see the documents relating to this, what do they say? It doesn't exist?
No, they just came up and asked me to leave.
Why would they keep documents if they did exist, I wonder?
I have no idea. Mm. I suppose the Vatican archives, the Vatican library...
Do people have a right to go there or not?
No, you have to ask. You have to get permission. I had to get permission from the English college. They have to know why you're actually... why you're going there, what you want to do.
Have they said anything about your book?
No, nothing at all. Nothing at
all. I mean, you sent it, presumably.
I have, indeed.
They've not replied, said what they think of it?
Not in the slightest.
No publicity at all.
I actually sent this article on the next Pope about Malachi. I actually sent that to the Catholic Herald, the Catholic World News, and they didn't even actually have the courtesy to acknowledge receipt of this.
Okay. If you'd like to ask Ian Gurney a question tonight, if you have any views on this, the possible end of the world after the next two popes, feel free to call us, 08704 20 20 20. Don't forget the new number, 08704 20 20 20.
James Whale.
Okay, welcome back. Ian Gurney is my guest. He's the author of a book called The Cassandra Prophecy, which tells the story about Malachi, an Irish priest, who predicted, and so far correctly, all the popes. The prediction only goes for two more popes after the current one, and then the end of life as we know it, I suppose. What does it say in the prediction?
Oh, all it says, really, is that the seven-hilled city will be totally destroyed and the great judge will judge all the people.
Mm.
So I think it's probably...
It might only be Rome, then.
Yeah, it could well be Rome. It would appear that it's mankind that has the problem, perhaps, rather than the planet. You know, I don't think we're going to see a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy scenario where it's blown away for for a large highway or anything like that. I think, from what I can see... from what I get particularly reading through some of the biblical stuff in Revelation and some of Nostradamus, is that that a war basically kicks off.
Mm.
And it starts, it would appear, with smaller skirmishes, small revolutions, shall we say, something like has been going on in the Balkans.
Mm.
What's going on at the moment in Macedonia? Just little skirmishes, things that are going on in Africa at the moment, although you can hardly call killing 2 million people a small skirmish.
Mm.
But it seems to start with a kind of war of revolution, which is also highlighted by some particular, it would appear, environmental and economic problems. The economic problems probably stemming from the environmental problems of simply getting things like fresh water and food.
Okay. If you want to talk to Ian, you've got another 20 minutes or so. He's with us. 08704 20 20 20 is the number. Richard is in London. Richard, you're on the air through to Ian Gurney.
Good evening to you.
Yes, good evening.
I come in halfway, and I just heard you mention Malachi, who evidently is an Irish priest.
That's right, yes.
Well, I don't know how you can take too much notice about Catholic... predictions or Catholic truth. The Greeks knew 2,000 years ago that the world was round, and so did Copernicus and Galileo and Bruno.
You're absolutely right.
And it wasn't until 1822 that the Catholic Church admitted it into the Codex Vaticanus.
Well, it wasn't actually really admitted then.
It was in 1822.
Really? Because it was back in 1992 that the Pope came out after this this 13 years in secret enclave to actually apologise to Galileo and to say that the Catholic Church had indeed changed its mind.
Well, he should have apologised to Bruno, who they burnt. Galileo recanted.
That's true enough, yeah.
And then again, with the awful history of the...
Did they let you off if you said, yeah, I agree with you, whatever you say, then they stopped torturing you? I'd have said, yes, well, listen, the world is flat, guys. Whatever you want, it can be as flat as a pancake.
Well, there were three popes at one time, as you probably know.
Three popes?
Yeah, three, yes. And,
yeah, but did you know there was a woman who was a pope?
Yeah, Pope Joan.
Yeah, oh, Joan, was it? Yeah. Not Joan, yeah.
Not Joan, Pope Joan. Well, there were three, because there was one in Avignon and one in Rome, and then Henry II of Austria came down and made his son pope.
That's right, yes, that was...
interesting.
The two anti-popes.
There's many anti-popes.
Actually, yes, there
are.
There's
about 50 anti-popes.
That's right.
And there's been about somewhere around about 260 ordinary popes.
That's right, there have been a lot of bad ones, that's for sure.
But the most important pope of all, who's... whose legacy has been, as we've seen to this day, was Henry II, who gave the only English pope permission to invade Ireland.
Yeah, that's, I cannot really, to be quite honest, in any way sort of go along with an awful lot of things that the Vatican have done.
Sure.
Or that the Catholic Church have done in the name of God. That's the frightening part about it. They've done all this in the name of God.
Well, were all these popes, including the three popes, named in this prophecy or not?
No. Malachi's prophecies go from 1143 and Innocent II. There have been many, many more popes. He just names the last 112.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
But he does, amongst those, mention a couple of the anti-popes, certainly.
Just to carry on a little bit, with their record of the Inquisition and the Medici and the various others... And
The Borgias.
The one that used to send his chaps out on the bridge of Avignon, sur le pont d'Avignon, for young ladies, with hindsight, they should, in 1860, they should declare... I can't think of the word for a minute.
Tell me, Richard, why your fascination with this is. I don't understand people's fascination with...
I'm an atheist.
I see.
I haven't always been an atheist. It wasn't until I was three that I turned atheist. And I'm 75 now. I've looked at the book and I've read the criticism of the Bible. And I'll tell you, I will donate £100 to the James Well charity... if the gentleman reading the Bible can tell me who the father of Mary's husband Joseph was.
Are you asking me?
Well,
Who the father of...
of Joseph.
Who the father of Joseph was.
Now, there you are. You got the Bible?
I haven't got it with me, unfortunately.
Well,
but I can't tell you off the top of my head. No, not at all.
Well, it's ridiculous that,
who is it, then?
There's two.
Oh, there are two?
In Matthew, in the 16th 16th verse of the first chapter, it's Jacob. And in the third chapter, 23rd verse of Luke, it's Heli. I can't even get that right.
I think what amazes me more than anything else is the fact that Malachi himself has actually seemingly... at least got the last 110 popes absolutely correct, and that I think is why I'm fascinated in this kind of thing. It's basically a fascination with prophecy.
Well, it's just ecclesiastical tipping. The Catholic Church can't be relied upon for anything. They have visions. Now you've heard of the of the Lourdes and the Fatima visions.
Of course I do. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about the Angel of Mon?
Oh, yes, I've heard about that.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. And I know my father, who fought in the war...
Mm-hmm. Was he actually there at Mons when this apparition appeared?
Well, I'll tell you something. There was no such thing as the apparition of Mons. It was written in 1926 as an allegory by the Bishop of London, Dr. Winnington Ingram. As an allegory. 1926. And, of course, distance lens enchantment.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So you've got the Angel of Mon.
All right, I can remember personally having looked up this just fairly briefly as I was going through a lot of the history of the Catholic Church and about some of the miracles, and I can remember actually seeing some newspaper headlines at the time that were actually quoting some of the soldiers that were there talking about this and talking about having seen that apparition. That I do know, and these were newspapers actually published at the time. That's all I can really say about that, because I haven't actually talked to anybody who was there.
I'll send £100 to the James Whale Charity, 1926.
All right.
Dr. Winnington Ingram.
Thank you very much indeed, Richard. Amazing, the amount of interest. Now, whilst we're talking about the end of the world and unrest and everything else, let me just bring you up to date with some news that we have in. Serious rioting has broken out in the loyalist areas of Belfast tonight. We'll have the full update on that in our news coming up in around about 10 minutes, but serious rioting has broken out in loyalist areas of Belfast.
On 1089 and 10:53 a.m.
Talk Sport.
10:53 or 10:89. Talk Sport Radio. James Whale, you will find. James Whale. Talk Sport Radio.
Yes, my friends, let the blessing of the great whale be upon you. It's been a very religious program tonight. I didn't plan it that way. It's pornography all the way tomorrow. Pornography tomorrow. After the midnight news, we're going to get a couple of birds in here and go wild and have sacrificial slaughters and all sorts. Right, let's just, before we do this, got John who's been waiting an age. Let's take this last call. John from Edinburgh, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, James.
Yes, John.
I'll need to be quick. I think my phone may run out of credit shortly.
Go on, then.
Just a quick point on this. The chap is explaining about the current Pope being described as the person who's, it's to do with the sun, etc. Are we not just actually making these predictions actually fit the Pope, or was the Pope actually aware of that when he was elected as Pope? Was he aware of that, that was a prediction from this chap Malachi?
I guess these people are. I think the whole of the hierarchy in the Vatican are very, very aware of Malachi's predictions. Now, if he was aware of that, okay, you could turn around and say, Pope John Paul II would have turned around and said, I have to do something. I am called the work of the sun by Malachi. I have to fulfill that prophecy. So, yes, I have to agree with you and say it's quite possible that he could have thought, the way to do this is to have a 13-year secret conclave, actually taking a look at the Catholic Church's attitude towards our solar system and whether, indeed, we revolve around the sun or the sun revolves around the earth. It is very possible they can do that. Whether it's possible that the cardinals, when they actually vote for a new pope, are able to in any way distinguish how that pope will fit the prophecy, I have no idea, as I say.
The reason I ask is it's just that with some of the predictions, with people like Nostradamus and things like that, when you actually go through, and I haven't actually bought your book yet, I'll go out and buy it very quickly.
Thank you,
but
sir.
It just seems to me, when I read about Nostradamus and these other predictions, it's as if they're almost making the predictions fit rather than the predictions being proper predictions, if you understand what I'm saying.
I understand exactly what you're saying, John. I think that's very, very true. You have to be... I mean, I will say right now that I am a skeptic. I always have been a skeptic about these things. I'm just fascinated by them. So I've tried to look at things very objectively, and it is very, very easy to actually take a Nostradamus prophecy and say, oh, yes, that fits that. It's very, very easy to do that. You can make a lot of mistakes. There was the famous 1999 quatrain, which everybody said was July 1999, but in fact, it could well have been May 99. He never said in the year 1999 and 7 months. He just said the year 1999, 7 months.
That's great.
So in fact, you could fit that into the American attack on the Chinese embassy in May of 1999, which caused a great deal of unrest between the Chinese and the Americans, and you could actually call the Great King of Fear a cruise missile. You can fit pretty much anything you want to events that you can find if you want to try hard enough, and I admit that very much so.
Well, I'm very interested in all this. It was just I just find sometimes that when you read through various topics like this, you just find that the prophecies, although there must be some substance there, they just seem very, very loose and almost as if they could cover a multitude of events rather than saying, for example, coming out and saying that the Pope will be John Paul II and he will be Polish and he would be a prophecy.
He actually does in a strange way call this Pope, Nostradamus calls him Paul Mansol, P-O-L-M-A-N-S-O-L, and that is a pure take from Malachi. Malachi calls him de labore solis, the work of the sun. Mm-hmm. Nostradamus calls him Mansol, bringing man, M-A-S, from manus, man's work, manual labor we get from that. That's Latin, is manus. And sol, obviously, the sun, so you have the work of the sun, and he calls him Paul Mansol, Polish Paul.
In the book, I'm just reading a bit of it now, in the book it says, Ian, that Polish Paul, the work of the sun, will die 3 leagues from Rome.
Yeah, there are 3, possibly 4, of Nostradamus' quatrains which seem to allude to the fact that he will die in France, possibly on a pilgrimage to Lourdes, and as yet, to my knowledge, he hasn't actually been on a pilgrimage to Lourdes.
Well, of course not.
Pregnancy.
He's read the book, hasn't he? He's not going to go anywhere near there.
Well, that's...
Would you if you were him?
Is it possible that if he actually feels he's about to die, that he will go to Lourdes just to fulfil the prophecy?
It could well be. Absolutely, John. It could well be.
Who knows?
Well, thanks very much, anyway.
Thank you, John.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ian, thank you very nearly. I mean, it's almost time for us to go, but to just to sort of conclude, really. So the Cassandra prophecy, which people can read, and is Ian's investigation into the Malachi prophecies, says we've got 2 more popes left to go. It doesn't say how long they're both going to live.
No.
And it doesn't say whether or not the rest of the world is going too. But, I mean... Armageddon is prophesied and has always been prophesied from the word go, and I wonder myself whether the end is always prophesied at the beginning, and always, whatever you do, there has to be an end. And it's a jolly good way of keeping people in place, isn't it? You know, carry on and behave like this, and it is the end, guys. All right, turn away, pollute, do this, do that, do it, and it'll be the end.
It is a very good way of, if you like, controlling people, having power over people by saying to them, there will be an end, and at that particular time, you will be judged. So if you aren't good now, if you don't do what we say now, then come Judgment Day, you will have to face the punishment. But that, to my way of thinking, that is propaganda, that is an abuse of power, that is intimidating language, if you like, and I don't necessarily try and put that over in the book. What I try and put over in the book is basically that the prophecies, although a lot of people scoff at prophecies, there is quite an empathy between some of the ancient prophecies and some of the things that are actually happening on the planet at the moment. Read the book and make up your own mind. Mm.
Did he get the last, the Pope that was only Pope for 30 days, did he get that? Or
oh,
not?
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, that was of the half moon. He came to the papacy under a half moon and died 33 days later, still basically under a half moon.
Does he give any idea how old the current Pope will be before he pops his clogs or not?
He doesn't really. There is one very, very strange Nostradamus quatrain which seems to talk in terms of a time span, but I haven't even worked it out. I got to 25 years, but I don't think it's right. But I would say, looking at the Pope at the moment, he's a frail man. He has Parkinson's disease. He's still keeping on working. His doctor says that inside he's a very, very strong man, but I fear with Parkinson's disease, he can only go so long. I think his time may be soon.
Okay. Ian, thank you very much indeed. If you want to find out more, get The Cassandra Prophecy. Fascinating book. If you're into all these sort of things. And you can go to TalkSport's website at TalkSport.net, click on our bookshelf, and you can find out more about it there. Ian, thank you very much.
Pleasure, James. Thanks. Thank you very much.